Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. We're in the month of February. It's Franchise Month. Actually, here in Texas, we have the upcoming Franchise Expo South next week and following week, the International Franchise Association Convention in San Antonio, Texas. And, of course, joining me at both of those events, as well as on the air here today, is my co-host, Stan Friedman.
Top of the morning to you, Paul, and good morning, good afternoon, or good evening to our audience, wherever they may be.
Yeah, and they're all over the place. We've had listeners from as far away as Australia. Actually, Stan hadn't even told you yet. We got confirmation just an hour before the show that Dr. John Hayes will be joining us on March 2nd as our special guest from the Middle East.
How awesome is that? I love John Hayes. And, you know, by next week, he and I will have something else in common that I never had in common with John Hayes before. And it's interesting because our guest today is the reason for that. And I guess we'll save that little teaser for a few minutes from now, and we can talk more about it a little bit later. But John Hayes, for those who don't know him, is the professor of franchising. The man is brilliant, and he's seen, done, and experienced just about everything you can in our business model, and is an incredible, incredible teacher that helps put others on the path as they learn about franchising, and a very giving guy for those of us who know him.
Absolutely. And starting off, as I like to say, Franchise Month, the U.S. private sector franchise jobs increased by 20,000 during the month of January, Stan. Franchise employment growth, though not as strong as the previous month, you know, remains at double the pace of the labor market overall for the past 12 months, and it certainly is an exciting time in franchising. What else do you have for our front of the house?
Paul, two things jumped out at me over the course of the past week as I try to just start collecting a stack of stuff that we might talk about forefront of the house, but something that jumped out with the little common denominator were about two women in franchising that are just remarkable leaders in their own right, albeit from different ends of the equation. First one that I'm going to tell you a little bit about is it's going to be a giveaway as soon as I say this, a former undercover boss, an Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year, and a past IFA chair. Might I be talking about Dina Dwyer Owens?
I am.
So. And, you know, no secret that the Dwyer Group has grown so incredibly, more than 50% in the past 18 months, and has just an incredible team of professionals, both in the corporate culture and structure, as well as in the field and their franchisee roster. Dina has another notch in the gun. So Dina, at the end of last year, was invited to do something that she's not done before, and that was to speak to a congressional caucus, or not so much a caucus, it's kind of caucus season right now, which is why I thought about caucusing, but she got to talk to the congressional retreat, which was an invitation to bring a discussion about her code of values and the principles that have driven the Dwyer Group to such global success to an audience of politicians. And think about it, as we enter the political season, if there's anybody in our world of franchising who might be able to get that collaborative kind of culture of working together and thinking across aisles and thinking across differences to a new place, government, maybe, just maybe, Dina Dwyer Owens would be the one to do it. And so she's added to her roster of professional places and organizations that she's spoken to, from Baltimore to Beijing, from Baylor to Harvard, and actually to the White House. Now Dina, too, has brought her message, and it humbled her, she said, to be able to deliver her message on values to the congressional retreat. And all we can do, Paul, something they do every day at the Dwyer Group, we can hope, we can pray that some of what Dina's common sense wisdom delivers in the business might be heard by some of those in elected office.
Absolutely.
So that was one woman of the two I want to talk about. And another one that caught my eye was an article that was published last week, so in USA Today, and this is about a topic that anyone who knows me knows my passion for, and it was centered upon diversity and a black female franchisee who, back in the early 80s, when she began her business, said what some might call a glass ceiling these days looked a whole lot more like a cement ceiling back then. And I'm talking about a lady named Valerie Daniels Carter. And Valerie Daniels Carter today boasts more than 4,000 employees and 120 restaurants that fly flags from Coffee Beanery to Pizza Hut. And she was featured in USA Today talking about diversity in franchising. And Miriam Brewer and Miriam actually will probably be speaking next week at the Franchise Expo South. For years, I enjoyed sharing the platform with Miriam as we try to bring more and more diverse audiences to the knowledge that, like a Valerie Daniels Carter, who started out in the 80s, early 80s, when it was really difficult for a woman to get into the business world and be taken seriously, much less a woman of color, that diversity is something that franchising embraces and embraces actively. When we see reports like those that Eric Stites at Franchise Business Review has put out recently, demonstrating that in a survey of more than 27,000 franchised units over the past 18 months, only 3% of franchise owners, according to Eric Stites at Franchise Business Review, were African American, and only about 20% overall were represented by minorities or ethnic minorities. Well, when you look at the population of the U.S., Paul, and how it continues to climb at a 45-degree angle, where the population represented by ethnic minorities and by women is so vastly growing, and yet dragging further behind that would be the representation of ethnic minorities and women that are owning franchise businesses. And so next week at Franchise Expo South, as has been the case at all the MFV Expos for all the years that I've been associated with them, there will be a diversity program, and some percentage of those many thousands of people that MFV brings to learn about franchising at the NRG Center are going to be coming with an ear toward diversity as well. And I thought it was just very, very poignant that this week that article appeared in USA Today, pointing to such a success story as is Valerie Daniels Carter, who, again, like Dina, opposite ends of the spectrum, both females, both in franchising. One is a Zor, one is a Z, both of them just breaking every record and growing businesses from their perspective ends of the business with the same kind of values, morals, and principle-centered leadership that make people with those kinds of values the successes that they become.
It's just a tremendous story, Stan. I saw that in all the alerts that I have out there regarding franchising and diversity and small business ownership and entrepreneurship. That article must have popped up 15 times over a three-day span. And you know what? It was well worth it. It was long overdue recognition, and I hear the message that you're saying. You know, here in the Houston area where I'm based, I can't help hear on the radio, see on the TV, read in newspapers, just a tremendous marketing effort put on by MFV Expositions for the upcoming Franchise Expo South. Saw a press release, too. It said entrepreneurs looking to make their business dreams a reality will be in Houston. FES is the premier franchise expo serving the Southwest U.S., Latin America, and the Caribbean, and will host hundreds of top franchise concepts and thousands of current and future entrepreneurs looking to become franchise owners. We're honored today to have as our guest CEO and president of MFV Expositions, Tom Portese. Tom, welcome to Franchise Today.
Good morning, or good afternoon, depending, I guess, where they're from. Paul and Stan, thanks so much for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Always a pleasure to have you, Mr. Portese.
Yes. It's you know, you guys are so busy now, I have to call into a radio station to speak to either one of you.
Well, we're honored, as busy as you must be this week ahead of the show with interviews and all the coordination. And I know you've got a fantastic team around you, but still it's got to be pulling you from a lot of different directions.
Well, I'm losing the three hairs left on my head, but no, as you said, we got a great team here. So, and what's crazy, guys, is it's kind of eerie quiet the week before a show, believe it or not. So much of the planning, so much of everything is already done. So as we say, it's in the hands of the gods now.
You know, Paul, it's kind of funny that when you listen to what Tom just said, maybe that's why Robert Cresante for next week was able to say, sure, I can come on a week before the IFA convention. No problem.
There's very little he could do to affect that convention that day.
Yep. Hey,
that's probably
absolutely
more truth to that than most of us give thought to, Tom.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And it is a great 1-2 punch that we have here. We have Tom on this week. We have Robert Cresante on next week. I mean, we're honored that 7 years on the air, we have some of the brightest and most influential minds in franchising on
and then
our
me.
Show.
And,
no,
and then me, just
right,
to switch
right
it up
there,
a little
Tom.
Bit.
You're right there, Tom. So, I mean, a lot going into it, into Franchise Expo South, and as amazing, you know, even West Coast Franchise Expo, and then, of course, you come right out of Franchise Expo South, and you have International Franchise Expo coming right around the corner. But unlike the past few years, where we're facing a little bit more uncertainty than we had in the last couple of years with the economy, especially down here in Houston, and the show couldn't be more timely. Oil companies, obviously the cornerstone of the Houston and the Texas economy, are laying off in large numbers. I mean, when you start hearing, you know, the Halliburtons, the Schlumbergers, the Baker Hughes of the world laying off, you know, five figures of employees, that sends a very hard ripple effect through this economy. And I know that's going to draw a lot of people that maybe weren't going to attend the event, but now, of course, you know, faced with that uncertainty, and maybe they missed the layoffs, and they're just saying, you know what, I'm just tired of looking over my shoulder. I'm tired of coming in wondering if that pink slip is there, and maybe it's time that I do control my own destiny. And, I mean, it's just a great event. I mean, all the different seminars, the education. And why don't you take us through, Tom, because our show is, you know, predominantly for the franchise professionals out there. And there are so many, you know, obviously there's 3,000-4,000 franchisors, and we have several hundred at the show. What are franchises missing by not attending, you know, these shows, the ones that have, you know, cast off and said, oh, trade shows are the thing of the past?
Well, you know, there was a time, guys, where we were doing 70 franchise shows a year here in the U.S., right? So this is pre-internet. When I was a young man, we were doing 70 a year, one every weekend, two on some weekends, and that's where people went to find out about buying a franchise, right? They went there, they went to talk to people and so on. Those days are gone. You know, we do three shows here in the U.S. now. We do one in Mexico City, we do one in London, we just announced one in Tokyo, but here in the U.S. we do three. The attendees at our shows today are so much different. They've done their homework. They've spoken to franchisors. They've spoken to franchisees. They've visited locations. They've read, you know, a number of FDDs. They're so far along. They're coming there to validate much of what, you know, they've learned. Many of the franchisors are coming there with preset appointments from prospects. So the world's changed a lot, guys. You two remember the shows. I mean, I'm talking to two guys who have been involved in them forever. And you two guys speak at the shows. As you mentioned early on, Stan, you're going to be doing the A to Zs. You know, you're going to be talking to a group of people, talking them through the process. You know, you've decided you want to be in business for yourself. Franchising is the option you've chosen. Here's what you do now. So for franchisors, I would say, listen, at this event or any event, and not just ours. These are the events where people are coming to that are on step three in a seven-step process now. So,
Tom, I find it, and I think, this is kind of the gist of what I've got posted up on franchiseexpo.com's blog post that I served up about a week or so ago. it's not a one-size-fits-all anymore. You know, it used to be when I was still a franchisor, I think, as you were pointing out a moment ago, a lot of the attendees were early stage. There was, and I'm, to some degree, there still are, or you wouldn't need an A to Z of buying a franchise to try to lay the land, give them the lay of the land as to what to experience on the floor of the show. But I think that there's a diversity of people who come today. There are still those that are wide-eyed and don't really have a sense or an understanding or an introspective yet of who they are and what they want to do. But there are far more than ever, as you've just pointed out, that are coming to validate what they've already started to learn and coming in a much better educated mindset because of all the things that you've had to adjust to, like the internet that weren't there when you started. And I think that's kind of why you guys, whether it's three shows or 30, I think it's why you're still around and will always be around, because it's not your dad's old Buick, but you don't quit driving the car you have to drive this year, even though it's different than the one from 5, 10, or 20 years ago. Isn't that right?
It's exactly right. It's exactly right. And sitting in your sessions, Dan, you're going to see that diversity, because you're going to be talking to some people whom, you know, are fairly along but still need that roadmap to the purchase.
Yep.
So, and then you're going to see those wide-eyed people that you referenced. So even in that session, you're going to see that range of people in the process.
You know what? I would love to ask you, Tom, before – I know that Paul's got a whole laundry list of questions, but I've got one on my mind that steers the conversation a little bit more toward the franchisor than the franchise prospect, because I find that a lot of times, and I wrote about it, I walk the floor of the shows, and it blows my mind how many franchisors I see just sitting in the booth with kind of a retail mentality, waiting for the traffic to find their way down their aisle, and they're sitting there in front of their computers just waiting. There are so many things to do at a trade show to draw traffic that I used to do as a franchisor, and I kind of remember laughing with you as to, didn't care where you put me in the room. You can stick me in a closet or in the men's room. If I can still fry wings, people are going to find my booth because their nose is going to bring them to me. But,
that's right.
But you need to have more of a proactive approach to be successful at a show than just sitting in the booth and waiting, don't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, because of the prospects that we're talking about, right? So our show represents, I mean, we say we're the mutual fund, if you will, of advertising, right, of your lead generation marketing. If franchisors use Wall Street Journal, we use Wall Street Journal. If they use USA Today, we use USA. They use Entrepreneur Magazine, we use Entrepreneur. All the different portals, we use all the different portals. You know, we're fortunate to have such a buy-in across all mediums. So by the time, again, this person gets there, it's a good prospect, to not take advantage of it, to not do the things that you've done, Stan, as a franchisor. You know, you get there early. If I remember correctly, you were always there early. You were always prepared. The doors opened. You were ready to talk to people about the great opportunity you had for them.
Yeah, even beyond the booth, Tom, I mean, you know, not so many people realize the amount of energy and curriculum and programming that's going on off the trade show floor. They're just looking at what's on the floor of the show. But then there are hundreds of people up or downstairs with Steve Gross coordinating all that for MFV, right? And you've got all these different seminars and workshops where people are getting educated. You know, franchisors that might have two or three or four people with them and might want to send one or two of those people on their team up to one of those free symposia. They can contribute to the conversation, actually meet some people that they might not have met at the booth yet, and demonstrate something about their brand that person might never have otherwise known. So it's collaboration, it's communication, it's working the show, not just sitting around hoping that somebody's going to find you. That's what I always thought was the most amazing opportunity for me, was to make as much of it, kind of like you want a franchisee to be when you, as a czar, bring somebody into your brand. You're going to have some percentage of your new franchisees that are going to come into your opportunity and sign on the dotted line and say, okay, now I sign, now make me rich.
Yeah.
It's going to be the others, the smart ones, that are going to realize they just bought into an opportunity. They've been handed a toolbox, and what are you going to do with it? Go work that opportunity. And I would hope as always would work the show the same way.
So, Stan, what you would do is you would book, you know, you'd book your participation early. You'd make sure you got the best plane fares. You'd make sure your, you know, your hotel was the right one. You've had it. You'd have a strategy for what you're going to do. Who's going to the show? What their roles are going to be? How they're going to approach it? You know, it wasn't left to chance. You had X amount of people going, and they all had a job, and everybody was going to do something. You invited your prospects. You invited your prospects to the show because you wanted to say to those prospects, hey, guys, we're developing this market with or without you. We'd love you to be one of our franchisees here, but we're getting aggressive. So come on down to the show, see everybody you want to see, stop by and see us. These are people who, you know, you've had, you've been in contact with, you may have even met with. So you took advantage of everything, the educational programs that were at a show. You left nothing to chance. And Paul, you probably go through that exact same set of steps with all the people that you're working with that are exhibiting at the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, and, you know, last week, you know, Stan's article came out on FranchiseExpo.com that talked about, you know, preparation and a strategy for the show. And our guest last week on the Franchise Today was Deb Evans, that talked about it from a digital standpoint and all the different things that attendees or exhibitors can do when they're exhibiting at this type of show. And as you said, you know, today's candidate is at step three in a lot of the research they've always done. And obviously a big part of that today is in the digital space. And it amazes me, as Stan says, you know, so many times you walk the floor and you see somebody that has that retail mentality, and they're just sitting there waiting for the next person to walk by and clearly didn't have a strategy of what they were going to do to attract people to their booth. And it's those same ones that basically have a zero exposure rate on social media and are not pumping it up, not only pumping it up for their own candidates, but the show in general. If people think they're going to be pigeonholed and say, no, come to the show, but only come see me, they're really making a big mistake. So, you know, my recommendation is promote the heck out of the show as much as possible. But then, of course, drill down further. Understand that your audience is going to be doing a lot of their work online. They're going to learn. They're more educated. They're more sophisticated than ever before. They're also more technologically advanced, to think that these candidates aren't very, very strong on social media is absolutely foolish. I mean, they are. And to share this information is really the first step in the whole process, because you can't do anything without sharing information first, then interacting with people, having an engaging conversation, and only then have you earned the right to a call to action.
Absolutely.
You know, and to that end, you know, MFV Expos has really done a great job on the digital front. I think your pay-per-click campaigns are absolutely phenomenal. It's hard for me to go any place online and not see the Franchise Expo South logo in the upper right-hand corner or down the right side of some type of news article or whatever. You've done a great job in the social space on Facebook and Twitter. It's out there. And, of course, it just complements and adds to all the print advertising you've been doing, some of the radio advertising, the TV advertising. I mean, it's just this morning alone, I saw three ads for Franchise Expo South during the Today Show between 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock this morning. That is fantastic exposure, and what you guys are doing supporting the loyalty of the brands that are exhibiting at your show, to me, is just absolutely off the chain.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It's the result of, as Stan pointed out, a bunch of people, or as you pointed out, a bunch of people getting together to make sure that the message is getting out there often and enthusiastically. Our business is a terrible business, and every franchisor knows how difficult it is to generate leads. If we were producing any other type of event, it's kind of easy. Right, if we're doing a boat event, we go to boating magazines. We know what they're reading. If you know, or they're part of a club. If they're a car enthusiast, we can invite them back every year. In this case, we have to throw out this big wide net. And we have to get those people who are looking to go into business for themselves or in that process and invite them to the show. And unfortunately, we can't get them to come back next year because they've either purchased a franchise or they've decided not to. They found a job. You know, we do get a small percentage back to talk to them about growing their business, whether it be that one franchise or getting involved in other units, how to become a multi-unit owner. But it's a difficult business. And the ones you're talking about, you know, through social media, Paul, and on online and pay-per-click, those are the people we want to get involved or we want to get our message in front of that are predisposed because they are searching this or they are reading this. But unfortunately, it's not the norm in our business. So along with that comes that big, wide net.
Well, and that big, wide net, you know, a lot of people think that, you know, billboard ads are the thing of the past. And I think you've got a couple strategically placed in Houston that is being seen by hundreds of thousands of people that are stuck in traffic, probably at the time where they're saying, damn, I wish I didn't have this job. I wish I had my own business. And there's this nice big billboard with the beautiful logo on it, and it couldn't be more timely for those individuals. Certainly, you're hitting their pain point right then and there. And I just want to make sure that all the franchisors realize what goes into supporting and marketing and promoting this event. I mean, when you look at the cost of exhibiting in relation to what is being done on their behalf, I mean, it's a tremendous value. I really believe it is a tremendous value.
Hey, Tom, you guys have a focus, too, on specialty markets, just as I know Miriam Brewer does the IFA's diversity program to encourage those from diverse backgrounds, veterans, too. What other specialty markets do you guys outreach toward?
You know, I think it's a series of so many. Sam, so we do this big wide net. We want to get people to clear these different hurdles who are looking to go into business, want to consider a franchise, want to, you know, come down to the event and speak to some people. But then, as you say, we take a very rifled approach. You know, there's a whole new market of graduating college students who are facing an opportunity where the jobs they're looking for just aren't there. Now what? You know, these people, along with their parents, who have college loans now to pay back, trying to make some difficult choices, and going into business for themselves is an option. And certainly franchising is the best way for them to do it because their experience is little to none.
Right.
So, you know, you talk about things like that. Obviously the minorities, veterans. There's so many different specific markets that we're able to reach and qualify that down to those from that sector looking to go into business for themselves, and we're fortunate to have strategic partners in those. No different stand than working with athletes, like, you know, you're certainly so involved in and have helped with.
Yeah, absolutely. And there, too, there are a lot of adjustments to make between athletes that are now starting to look at some of our opportunities or coming to us in their first and second years on the field or on the court, which is a big relief from prior years where you got guys who were 10 years already retired and past the opportunity stage for a great many things that somebody who started thinking about it earlier, like some of these younger guys are doing now, can at least start building a war chest and putting some money away, beginning with the end in mind, understanding that there is a career after they're done playing ball that's called the rest of their life, and that the opportunity to play ball is just the ticket to get there. And so, again, educated consumers like you and I have been saying all along, begin with the end in mind, goes a lot further than ending wishing and hoping, because hope is not a strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Franchise Today, I'm Stan Friedman along with Paul Segretto, and we're speaking today with Tom Portese, president of MFV Expos. MFV, as most of you know, are the producers of the world's premier franchise trade shows here in the States. Those include the IFE in New York City, the Franchise Expo South coming up just next week, middle and part of next week in Houston, Texas, the West Coast Franchise Expo, which I'm going to ask you a question about in just a minute, Tom, because that name might be changing soon, or maybe not. But Franchise Today is brought to you by Paul Segretto's Franchise Foundry, a business accelerator that helps early-stage franchise systems stand up and emerging franchisors build their brands for sustainable growth as they move forward. Franchise Today, also brought to you by yours truly and FRM Solutions, offering robust, out-of-the-box CRM and content management software, all tailored specifically for franchising and assisting franchisors with the management of the relationships that they create between franchise prospects as well as existing franchisees. That's why I love the opportunity to teach that ABCs, Tom. I'm not talking to a room full of prospects for my business, but I'm educating prospects for my clients, and then hopefully my clients can benefit from my software in helping them manage the relationships with those new candidates that are coming into their pipelines and funnels. Tom, I wanted to ask about the West Coast, because as I called it out there, you know, I understand this is going to be a big game changer this year with MFV moving the venue, which a few years ago went from L.A. to Anaheim, and now from Anaheim to another of America's greatest franchise capitals, Denver, Colorado. Bit of a game changer, isn't it?
Little bit. You know, as well, your listeners know, economic development, economic growth fuels franchise development. And, you know, Denver is exploding. And we want to put our clients, our franchise or exhibitor clients, in front of that exploding market. And Denver is just, it can't be ignored.
So we're still calling it the West Coast Franchise Expo.
And only a few people have pointed that out, that that's, you know. But we see those two shows. I think the International Franchise Expo is going to be in New York City forever and ever for obvious reasons. Right? We have people from 125 countries come to that event, and New York is that kind of a place, one of the few places like that in the world. But with the exception of that, Houston next year goes to Dallas. And the reason it goes to Dallas is because of the Super Bowl. And as you guys know, we're at the NRG Center, so it affects it. But that may be the future. Both the West Coast Franchise Expo and Franchise Expo South may move from year to year. You know, markets like Atlanta can't be ignored. And it's not as simple as just adding another show because of, you know, what we talked about. We're not looking for just local people who are thinking about buying a franchise. We have to incorporate into that, you know, people who are in the process and where can we create a meeting place. So those two shows, Franchise Expo South and West Coast Franchise Expo, may be moving from from year to year.
Yeah, and maybe not to the point of having 70 shows again, but, you know, there are certainly other cities, as you're pointing out, that definitely could be hotbeds for franchise development. You know, you mentioned right before the break about this younger generation, unemployed, underemployed, saddled with student loans, working with families that are obviously living longer. And I was really interested to see and very intrigued when I was on the floor at International Franchise Expo in New York this past June. The younger people coming in, wide-eyed, definitely an entrepreneurial generation, you know, asking so many questions and having so many ideas well beyond what us three would look at as our, you know, guidelines. There is no limit to their creativity and their innovation, and I think we're really going to see some exciting things to come. I know just recently I read that it said 40% of the U.S. population will be controlling their own destiny, meaning maintaining their own living, earning their own money on their own in a business. I mean, that's going to be huge for franchising in the future.
Paul, it's such a great point. And you know, more and more people want to be in business for themselves. And these young people, that's their future goal, to be in business for themselves. You know, we three happen to be in this amazing industry that affords them the opportunity to do that sooner. They don't have to go through the trials and tribulations that, you know, you go through in order to get to own your own business. In a lot of cases, they have the skill sets to partner with a concept that has the, you know, the formula. I mean, we're talking to franchisors, so we don't need to tell them all the reasons, but it's a bigger and bigger market. Listen, I'm the father of four. My baby is a freshman in college now. You know, going into business for themselves is a great option.
You know, years ago, I spoke at Cornell University to an undergraduate course that was being taught that kind of hugged up a little bit to private equity and small business ownership. And I know full well that the kids in that classroom weren't sent to Cornell University with any expectation on the part of their parent investors in their careers and educations that they think about being franchisees. But, you know, when you stop and think about what happened in 08 and when the bottom fell out on the jobs creation, a lot of those transferable skills that those kids are learning at Cornell, just like what athletes can transfer and take from the playing field or the court into, a new venture in the franchising world, are transferable skills. And for those who are forward-thinking game changers, no reason why you can't create more opportunities from some young, great minds and create, with some help from old horses like us, some real new legacy brands going forward. And, Tom, you know, every year when I walk the floor of the shows, I'm amazed by how many new concepts, not just companies in space where we're now 5 or 6 or 8 or 10 deep already, but new concepts, new ideas. What percentage of companies that come into the expo on an average would you say are first-timers in their space, new ideas, completely forward-thinking entrepreneurs that have now taken something that hadn't been thought of before and brought it into the world of franchising? Are you seeing more of that?
More and more year after year. So as you know, the industries that are now represented by franchising is just nearly every one. Right? Just nearly every industry has some tie to a franchise system. But I would say about a third of our exhibitors every year, every show, are new concepts. New in terms of another twist to an industry, new in terms of being into an industry that wasn't touched before, or a new twist to something that's out there. But a third of our exhibitors are new every show.
Yeah, and the unique thing about that, too, especially as we're dealing with a potentially younger candidate in this millennial generation that really don't have the financial resources in order to buy, let's say, a full-blown, you know, bricks and mortar. And as you said, a new twist to industry. I mean, obviously, we saw the big push with food trucks. A lot of franchises started out as food trucks. A lot of existing franchises also added on a mobile component. And then, of course, there's home-based or small office-based type businesses where this younger generation can use this skill set that they've developed online. I mean, heck, all this online to me, you, and Stan look like technology, and I know Stan is in the technology space, but we still refer to it as technology. This younger generation refers to it as the norm. It's not technology. It's no different to them than a piece of paper and a pen was to us when we were growing up. So it's really a fascinating time to be able to use this skill set and to be able to conduct business in a lot of different ways. And my hat's off to the franchisors that have that forward-thinking mindset, as Stan always points out, you know, to adapt to this changing market. Technology is a big part of it. It is a huge part of it today. And we've talked over the past few weeks. We've had Catherine Monson on. We've had Shelley Sun on and others talking about the NLRB ruling and the co-employership. And we're talking about the increasing minimum wage and what franchisors are doing in order to bring more technology into the mix, like McDonald's having these kiosks, you know, where people can go up and punch in their order. And that's the technology that people today want to see. And I think it's going to reinforce the foundation of franchising moving forward.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. You know, another thing, as you were talking about that, Paul, I was thinking about these young people. For every person in the Houston area affected by the downturn with oil prices and so on, and as you pointed out, are looking to get into business either by choice or by circumstance, right? And obviously, a franchise makes a lot of sense for those people just simply because, you know, they're not the true entrepreneurs, right? If they were true entrepreneurs, they would have been in business for themselves to begin with. They're that quasi-entrepreneur that is tailor-made for a franchise system.
Absolutely.
So for every one of those people considering it, there's some other, you know, college student graduating or young person saying, God, I don't ever want to be in that position. Mm-hmm. I don't want circumstances to make those decisions for me. So you're seeing more and more people look at it. And, you know, each time we see that, you know, there's a mess in terms of an industry or an economy, we know it's not big business that's going to get us out of it. It's always
that's
small
right.
business. So that's going to continue to grow and grow. And, again, we're all fortunate to be part of an industry that understands that so well and has given many people opportunities.
Yeah, and, you know, franchising is built on relationships. Right now, we are in a collaborative type of economy. I mean, this younger generation has forced us into that. And there are more collaborative type offices, you know, some people working at home, some people working at an office. But I think what's really going to be the pinnacle of collaboration is going to be this older generation that has the financial wherewithal, but yet they have, you know, their health and they want to work longer or being involved in something longer. And I think just like the multi-generational homes that are popping up on the West Coast where there's three generations living in on one roof and they're actually building the homes specifically for that three generations, like almost having three master bedrooms of different sizes in the common living area. I think you're going to see more and more of this older generation collaborating with this younger generation. The younger generation will be the street, they'll be the organization, they'll be the operational, they'll be the practical support and driving force behind the business. And then you have the older generation that'll have the financial wherewithal, they'll have the wisdom, the guidance, and the oversight. And I think it's going to be a great combination moving forward. I think it's going to be super exciting.
I think you're right. I think it's it's an attractive opportunity for a parent with a graduating student whom, whether the parent is paying the student loan back or this, you know, it's a shared debt, the parent's looking and saying, well, they don't get a job. This loan's not getting paid back. And if they do get a job and it's only going to be, you know, at this level, it'll never get paid back or they'll never leave my house. So I've got so much invested anyway. Let me invest another $50,000 and start a business. Put this person there. I can help out today because I could do it while I'm working and add as much as I can and build it to something. So I think you're 100% right. I think you're going to see more and more of that.
We've certainly given the audience a lot to chew on today, Paul and Tom, and I'm going to ask you for one more nugget if I can so that with all that they've heard on this program and all the ideas to stimulate ways to make this show coming up in Houston and all of the expos that franchisors attend as meaningful as the opportunity can be, one more nugget for takeaways, Tom. I see that camera set up at the back of the expo room at all of the MFV shows, and I wonder how many franchisors really think about the take-home value of some of those produced videos and the difference that they can make with something streaming on their website or using a piece of video as we're talking about technology instead of just an email to follow up with candidates. Can you talk for a minute about how franchisors can benefit from the bring-home value by doing one of those videos on the floor of the show?
Well, I think any video helps a ton, right? You're talking to a person who is about to make a humongous decision in their life, probably, you know, the top three decisions they'll ever make in their life. And to have that personal way of speaking to them is so, so important. So whether it's a video they make on the floor or if they have some video and they could get it up on their website, it's super important. From our perspective, you know, we'd like to take advantage of the fact that we have 250 franchisors together in Houston, or we have, you know, 500 franchisors together in New York, to use that as an opportunity to have these people interviewed. As we talked about, we do three shows a year, but we want to be able to take that and extend that across the country. So, you know, through our website, franchiseexpo.com, we want to give individuals who can't get to one of these shows the opportunity to see it and touch it and, you know, hear from the franchisors who were there. So it's just another marketing opportunity for a franchisor. And listen, everybody has to evaluate what makes sense to them in terms of cost of a franchise sale, right? The days of saying how much it's costing me to generate a lead and so we're all way past that. What is it costing me in advertising and marketing dollars to sell a franchise, and how can I continue to improve that? And anytime you could get in front of a qualified audience face-to-face, we just think it just makes it that much better. Hello?
Yeah, no, I mean, just so much to take in. I mean, we could easily talk for, you know, 2-3 hours, although none of us have the time to do that. I mean, just a tremendous amount of information to take in, and I hope people, franchisors that are listening, realize the various opportunities, the benefits of being involved with the expos. You mentioned, you know, franchiseexpos.com. I mean, just a great resource in between the shows. You know, we're in an era of content. We're seeing more and more stuff come out. Stan's article last week on franchiseexpo.com, which was, you know, great. It's that type of information that's going to let these conversations live on in between events, as well as, you know, social media is going to let these events live on and on as your audience, your community continues to grow online. I just think it's tremendous on many different fronts. And Stan, I think you were going to say something, but I think I had you muted, and I apologize for that.
The only point I wanted to draw out while Tom modestly said, you know, video is good anywhere. It is good anywhere. But when you're being interviewed in a robust environment, it's kind of like seeing a TV interview when it's happening on the street with a news reporter. You stop. You just stop and watch. You can't help it. It's TV live. And when you're doing it on the floor of the show and you've got that robust audience buzzing all around and you've got somebody up on that stage being interviewed, when people come down that aisle, they kind of have the same response. They stop. And that gets captured on that video so that even a year from now or a month from now, when a franchisor who stepped up and did that interview piece puts it on his website or somebody sees it, it looks just like a man on the street interview. It certainly lends some credibility. It makes him an authority to whoever is looking at that video and streaming it. So I just think,
certainly,
again,
and certainly, Stan, it can be shared, you know, like you said, the website, but on their blog, it could be shared across their social media. They could develop a YouTube channel, and that could be a cornerstone of their YouTube channel. The list is endless.
See, it sounds so much more credible when you two say it. So I'll just take a... But, you know, here's another thing. We're actually going to be taking many of those interviews and the videos that are, you know, put together with B-roll, and we're going to be doing 30-minute TV shows across the country. So we're going to take it, and the premise will be, hey, you know, we do 3 of these franchise shows a year, and we know you can't get to, well, you know, too many people can't get to them, so we're going to take it to you. So we're gonna probably feature 5 companies in each of these shows, these 30-minute shows.
Awesome. So, great idea. It's been a real pleasure and a real treat, Tom, to get to spend a little time with you. And you know, an hour feels like a long time for a podcast, and spending a good half of that hour with somebody that's got so much to share as you do seems like, you know, 5 minutes is all it took here, and we could keep going. But if time just marches on. Paul, any closing
thoughts?
Well,
listen, I appreciate so much you guys having me on, but more importantly, I appreciate the support you guys give to the industry. You know, I think this show is so indicative of what you guys do and giving back and provide so much good information. And I also appreciate so much what you guys are doing at the event this week. So thank you so much, guys.
We appreciate you too, Tom. Paul, any closing thoughts?
No closing thoughts. Like you said, it was great talking with Tom here. I know when we're on the expo floor, we usually get a minute or two of his time because everybody wants it, and he's keeping an eagle eye on everything that goes on. And I certainly appreciate that. Best of luck at Franchise Expo South, and of course at IFE and West Coast Franchise Expo in Denver towards the end of the year. Great time. Thanks, Tom. Really appreciate you taking the time to be here today.
Thanks so much. Look forward to seeing both of you.
Same
Bye-bye.
Here.
See you next week,
well,
Tom. Stan, travel safe.
Thanks. Bye.
You bet. Travel safe.
Stan, just tremendous amount of information for franchisors of all sizes to be thinking about. And certainly, as we both know, we could have, talked a lot. I had a lot of different questions. You know, as we've talked about collaboration between, veterans and athletes and how they look at franchises. And of course, I can go deeper into, the whole millennial thing and look at how they look at opportunities. I mean, it's a good time for franchising. We have a lot of new franchisors. I even wanted to talk about, and we didn't have a chance to, I know they have a new emerging brand section that they tried out at West Coast Franchise Expo, and I believe there's going to be here at Franchise Expo South. So there's just a lot of momentum moving towards franchising as we're in the month of franchising in February with Franchise Expo South next week, and, of course, the International Franchise Association Convention the following week in San Antonio with some 3,500 franchise professionals will converge on the Alamo City.
Last thought on my part, Paul, is that much like the IFA convention itself can be so daunting and overwhelming for people coming that don't plan ahead, and Tom said it earlier in the podcast, if you plan and you take a look at what's going on and all that's going on in Houston at this upcoming expo or any of the MFV programs around the country, it's just like IFA. You can find the right track of information, you can go to the right symposia. You don't just need to bring a booth if you're a franchisor and sit in your booth, but look at what's going on all around you. There are an incredible number of opportunities for you to engage in dialogue and conversations and sitting in the audience in some of the free symposia rooms and engaging, interacting, and even participating in Q&A and sessions that will help bring attention to you and your brand for others that are seated in that audience that wouldn't have known who you were. So treat this like IFA. Go with purpose. Go with conviction. Take a look at the programming and the agendas and all the different symposia and places where you may have a good reason to be in that room and maybe contribute to the conversation and the dialogue. And get out of your booth. Don't just sit in the booth. If you're coming as a first-timer or as an attendee, go to those classrooms and participate in as much as you can. As a prospective franchisee, learn as much as you can about how to attack the floor of that trade show by knowing a little bit more about yourself. So think about what's important to you, what kind of a business you'd want to participate in, whether you can afford the parameter. For, kind of like buying a house, you don't want to go look at a $1 million house when you only have a $200,000 budget. Nothing you look at in that $200,000 range is going to look good anymore after you've looked at the $1 million.
Stan, and earlier you also mentioned about, if there's a couple of you in the booth, go upstairs and participate in some of the seminars upstairs. And even beyond what it takes from a franchisee standpoint or a franchise candidate standpoint, there's some good sessions there that will help you as franchisors. Lee Plave, every show through his company, Plave Cook, sponsors an event called Web 2.0 Data and Social Media in Franchising. And I've been honored to be speaking along with Lee and Teresa Huska from Michael Seiden Associates. And, that's really not something that's informational for franchise candidates. We typically get franchisors, and we also get individuals that are looking to franchise their business
right.
as entrepreneurs. And it's so important because a lot of people say, oh, my God, it's so boring to listen to stuff about, data breach and responsibilities and the consequences and the repercussions. And I bring this up just like I brought up last week about being at the top of the pinnacle. Jimmy John's and still missing the boat on Staten Island, New York, where they had to close three locations for poor business. While we were on the show today, I got an alert, Buffalo Wild Wings. I know the wings segment is very important to you. 10 reports of patrons being sickened by the norovirus. And this stems from January 30th. But here's the repercussion. I mean, obviously, we want to make sure these people are okay. My hearts go out to them. My hearts go out to the people at Buffalo Wild Wings that I know is a stellar organization. But just by this information, for one location, the price of BWW stock dropped by 6%. Okay?
Wow.
Suggesting there's more negative news on the way. So, you know, these things that, you know, come across as boring, you know, whether it be data breaches, whether it be, you know, sanitation, you know, when you're at the National Restaurant Show, take the time to go to some of those classes that talk about this. Take the time to educate yourself and be better at it, be the best that you possibly can be, because the ripple effect in today's digital world especially is absolutely unbelievable. We're talking one location out of hundreds gets affected by this, and the stock drops 6%. Unbelievable.
Can you say Chipotle?
Oh, I'm not even going to go there because I don't even know where that's. And that's now.
Perfect case in point.
It's got criminal investigation going on. I mean, it's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Rock star status one day, and the next day in today's world, there's no place to hide. So.
Yep.
It might be a little boring sometimes to sit through the things you need to, but boy, it becomes a lot more problematic later when you try to put the horse back in the barn.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. Stan, another great show next week. Robert Crisanti, president and CEO of the International Franchise Association, going to give us a little bit of insight into the upcoming convention and what's going on Capitol Hill with respect to franchising. Stan, as always, great show. Love having you as my co-host.
As always, enjoyed it, Paul. Looking forward to seeing you in Houston and just a few more days, and there we'll be. So thanks again for the opportunity to be with you here, and have a great rest of the week, Paul.
Until next week, my name is Paul Segreto, wishing you the best, the very best, in this great, great thing we call franchising. Franchise Today is out.